Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and wherever you are in the world, I hope you are well. You had a good week? Yeah, me too. Well, whatever the weather's been like, whatever has happened at work, whoever's really annoyed you, I hope for the next 30 minutes or so, you'll be able to forget all about it and them, because in this episode, we're talking books, we're talking reading, we're talking love, friendships, and everything in between. And joining me for our episode are two wonderful authors who'll be going head to head in a war of the words a little later on. My first guest is the Sunday Times bestselling author of 17, probably 18 novels, including The Beach Cafe, An Almost Perfect Holiday, and Anything Could Happen. And here to tell us about her latest novel, I think it's the 18th, she'll be able to tell me, it's called The Best Days of Our Lives, Lucy Diamond. Hello.
Hello, and you're correct, it's the 18th. Well done, that's a good start.
Thank you very much, got my facts right. And my second guest today started writing fiction whilst working at the NHS. Since becoming a full-time author, she's written over 25 Sunday Times bestsellers. Woo! And sold over 13 million copies of her books. Those novels include Should I Tell You? Maybe This Time. And You and Me Always. Here to tell us about her new novel, Promise Me, it's Jill Mansell. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Joe. It's lovely to be here.
Lovely to be here with you. And I was going to do the introductions, but actually you two know each other, don't you? Lucy, Jill, Jill, Lucy.
We do.
You're old mates.
Not that old, thank you very much. We're mates, yeah.
Authorly mates, I should have said. You're authorly mates. It's lovely to have you both here through the power of Zoom. And over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to talk about your new books. We're going to talk about your writing, get some reading recommendations from you. And of course, we'll do the book off, where your friendship will be tested. And each of you gets 3 minutes to tell us about a book that you absolutely love and think that
and we'll end up never read. Having lunch together again.
We won't. It's all over, Jill.
No, I can't imagine it for a second. You'll be after the competition is over, you know, there might be a 24-hour period of no speaking, but I think you'll be, you know, best of friends again after that.
We can get over it.
Jill, can I start with you and talk about Promise Me? We did an event together, didn't we, a few weeks ago, which I absolutely loved. And we talked about this book. And I remember asking you then, and I'm going to ask you now, because you're always on the lookout for new ideas. And as an author, you're intrigued by situations and people. How did the sort of premise for this one come about?
Well, I'm sort of like a meerkat when it comes to looking for new ideas. And also, after writing so many books, you're sort of looking for just anything that you haven't done before, because there's nothing worse than people saying, oh, the books are just a bit samey. You're always looking for a situation and this is a new one for you. And I like to go around scouting for locations around the Cotswolds, particularly because that's close to where I live. And I visited a little gorgeous little market town called Nailsworth, which is one of my favourite places. And I suddenly really felt, oh, this is the feeling that I want in my book. So the place in my book is much smaller. it's more like a large village than a small town, but it has these big houses. It's down in a valley and it has these big houses up on the hill. And you see one of these houses and you think, who lives there? What's the view like looking down over the town and seeing everybody going about their business if they've got binoculars? And I just got the feeling, this is it. This is where I've got to set the next book. I don't use real locations anymore because people criticise you and tell you you've got it wrong. So it's much easier to invent a little place called Foxwell, which I did. And I saw this really lonely looking man walking a dog. And I just spend my life going around thinking, who are they? Who are these people? I want to go up and interview absolutely everybody I see in the street, really. And so I thought, oh, I haven't used before a really sort of grumpy octogenarian. He's grumpy for a reason, but nobody knows that reason. And so then he's wealthy. He lives in the big house up on the hill. He meets this young woman, and takes a bit of a liking to her, which is a rare thing for him. He doesn't really like people at all. And he has his work cut out persuading her to give up her job and go and work for him. Then her situation changes. She does end up moving down to this little place called Foxwell. And sort of she's made an offer she can't refuse. But I can't say that really, because I've already had a book with that title. And so she ends up, as these books quite often do, you know, a girl in a new place with a new job, and she's got her work cut out. She vows to try and cheer him up and make him happy and realise that life can be nicer if you're a bit more cheerful and outgoing and friendly to people instead of making everybody hate you. So that was the original idea, the premise, and how it came about. And then I sort of just spend the rest of my book thinking, what can happen next? Okay, what can happen next? Now what can happen next? Because I'm not a plotter, I am a pantser. So that was it, yeah.
I feel really happy in the company of pantsters, if I'm honest, Jill, because I'm one of them as well. Now I'm looking to Lucy to see if she's part of the club or not.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay.
Potters are weird.
And I also love the fact that you don't use real places now, Jill, because an author friend of mine who made the mistake of using a real place quite recently had a lot of the, I think you'll find you can't turn right up that road because it's a one-way street. And
absolutely.
It's like, yeah. It's not worth it, is it?
But do people do sometimes look up my books, the places in my books? They say, oh, I want to go on holiday there. Then they get cross,
and they
can't, because it's not real.
We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that book, Jill, and about the setting and everything. But Lucy, could you perhaps just set up the story of the Mackenzies for us in your new book, The Best Days of Our Lives?
Sure. Well, this one is a bit of a weepy. So if you fancy a good old cathartic sob, Joe, or anyone listening, then get yourself some tissues.
Yeah, I've had my cathartic sob. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, and I love big, messy, dysfunctional families. I think I grew up in one. And I just find families endlessly interesting in terms of, you know, there's always some beef, there's always, you know, drama in one way or another. And coming out of lockdown when I started writing this, I was feeling a bit battered and, you know, shocked like we all were. And I was really thinking, God, life is so precious, isn't it? And thinking about lots of families who have gone through tough times in the last few years, and the Mackenzie family do go through a tough time. It's set over the course of a year, and they, in that time, they go through heartbreak, birth, death, falling in love, lots of secrets coming out. The main story is about what happens after Lenny, who's 35, comes off her bike in an accident and dies. And it's about the family sort of like trying to reconfigure themselves as a family, trying to pick up their lives after, you know, what's been really devastating. And they all go about it in quite different and not very good ways. So Belinda, Lenny's mum, she becomes obsessed with a clairvoyant, where I think she's just trying to hang on to any last bit of communication she can with her daughter, even though, you know, this woman is a fraud. And then there's Tony, Lenny's dad. He's knocking on for 60 and about to become a dad again. So he has a bit of a journey where he sort of has to come to terms with the fact he's not been a very good dad up until now, and thinks about, you know, can I do things differently? Then there's Alice, Lenny's sister, and she, at the start of the book, is very angry and sort of struggling. And she starts trying to collect all Lenny's friends, everyone who knew her, all their memories of Lenny as a means of sort of like staying close to her sister, but finds out a few surprises along the way, things she didn't know about Lenny. And also there's a bit of a blast from the past that comes for Alice too, which sort of sets her story going in a completely different direction. And then finally there's Will, the younger brother, who is sort of carrying a bit of guilt and shame about what happened to Lenny secretly. He's not told anyone, and he is in massive denial. He just goes off to Thailand thinking, right, I'm just going to put all that behind me. I'm going to live the dream and just not think about any of that. But as we all know, you can run away from these things, but they catch up with you eventually. So he has to do a bit of reckoning. Hopefully ends up being a really uplifting book. If you finish all my books and you feel really miserable, then I've not done my job properly, because I want my readers to finish a book thinking the world is a really good place and with really good people, and that, you know, life can be really tough, but people are amazing and resilient, and, you know, we all muddle through and come out the other side of these things.
Well, I think you absolutely achieved that, Lucy. And what I was going to ask both of you actually is how do you approach balancing? I mean, certainly in the case of your new book, Lucy, but also a bit for you, Jill, how do you balance the sort of, I don't know, the more poignant, moving moments and storylines with the humour? Because the humour does come through a bit and it helps lift us. So are you, I'll start with you, Lucy, are you very conscious of that and of putting, you know, the lighthearted bits in as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to serve up a complete misery fest. So, and I think actually as Brits, we're often really good at finding humour in those dark moments, aren't we? With some, you know, dark humour and sarcasm, and we sort of, we're quite good at laughing at ourselves. So even though, you know, the worst has happened at the start of the book, the characters, you know, they're never, obviously they're sad, but it's, yeah, humour definitely sort of keeps the book going, and a sort of tension as well. There's, you know, having secrets to find out, that is a really good way to balance some darkness by sort of having a good narrative pull that will keep the reader reading.
Yeah. And what about you, Jill? You're always looking for the humour, aren't you?
I don't think I'm looking for it. It's just there. I mean, it's just life, isn't it? I worked in a neurological hospital for nearly 20 years. So you are just walking between, you know, death and disaster and joking at the same time. I mean, there's just that sort of hospital, slightly black humour sometimes. But in any situation, people do crack jokes, even in serious moments. And that's just life. So it just comes naturally to me. I suppose when you're writing, you sort of swap it around a bit, so you don't have sort of 15 chapters of misery, total misery, and then 5 chapters of hilarious jokes. You just chop and change about just as we do from day to day anyway.
And characters are so important for providing humour as well, and the lightheartedness of these books. But characters for you, Jill, are so, so important in general in terms of how you write your books and how they're received, because you have to like your characters to be able to write them, don't you?
Yes, I do. Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't think I could write something about a serial killer, you know, a really serious book that was just miserable every day, because I don't want to sit down every morning and be surrounded by all that kind of darkness. So I do. I love my characters, and sometimes there's bad, naughty characters, but they don't necessarily believe that they're bad or naughty or unpleasant. They always have a reason inside their own head for doing what they do. So, and again, I think that's true to life as well. So just make a balance, really.
Yeah. Because I think that, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think feel-good fiction, if we're using that as an umbrella term, is in a really good place at the moment, because we're all, many of us are looking for that escapism, if you know what I mean. Yeah. We're looking to have a laugh and a smile and everything. And that comes back to what you were saying, Lucy, a bit of like, oh, there's a bit of doom and gloom in this book and it's a bit of a weepy, but ultimately we're talking about an uplifting story, aren't we? And I think we all need that.
Oh, we do, especially in February, we do. Yeah, and I feel like a bit of escapism can just really take you out of whatever's going on in your real life. If you're having a bad day, if things are tough, just turn into a book where you trust the author and you feel like, okay, I know they're going to deliver me to a good place where I feel joyful and uplifted and I, you know, enjoy myself along the way. I think that is really wonderful. Yeah, definitely. All through lockdown, I read so many feel-good books that just sort of took me away from the grim reality on the news.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, well, there has been quite a lot of gritty sort of dramery things on the telly and, you know, box sets to binge and stuff. And that's all well and good. I'm thinking of Happy Valley here, but like you can watch an episode of that and then suddenly just go, right, now what I need is to pick up a Lucy Tymon book or a Jill Manson book, because I need to completely flip this dark grittiness on its head.
And I think the things that amaze me most and thrill me the most is when I get a letter or an email from somebody who just says a really personal thank you because reading my books got them through a really terrible time in their lives. And that's
amazing.
That's just the best part of writing this kind of book, I think.
Yeah. I agree. No, it's you're right, it's the best. It's so wonderful. It really makes you feel like, oh, I've helped somebody, or I've, you know, made someone's day a little bit better. I mean, that's just such a lovely thing to have as part of your job. It's great.
And do you read in your own genre? Do you like reading, you know, obviously you read each other, your author mates, but do you read sort of in and around your genre? Or are you also having a little bit of crime thriller over here, maybe, or a bit dystopian fiction over there?
I read really wide. I don't really read science fiction. I'm married to a sci-fi fan. Don't really.
All right.
But I love crime thrillers, for instance. I read really widely.
And I do too. And I used to read millions of what they used to call chick lit. I hate that word, I hate the term, but it does explain roughly what it is. But then I felt like a computer that had filled up to the brim and I just couldn't do it anymore. So now I'm a bit sort of all over the place, like Lucy. I read thrillers and no science fiction. No science fiction, no fantasy, sadly. I just can't get into it. But all sorts of things. I mean, what they called women's contemporary fiction. If it's good, then I will read that now. But yes, it's nice to have a mixture. It's like some days I'll wear something pink and sometimes I'll wear something black. It's just, you just want to ring the changes, don't you?
Absolutely. And is there anything that you've been reading and enjoying recently? Lucy, I'll start with you, that you want to mention and give a shout out to?
I just read and loved the new one by Ellie Griffiths called The Last Remains. Well, I don't know if it's going to be the final book about Dr. Ruth Galloway. She's saying it's the last for now. I think there's been like 15 or something of them. So if you've not read one of this series, don't start with this one, because what's great about it, it's brilliant if you're a fan like me, because throughout the book, she references so many of the other cases that Ruth Galloway has solved or been part of. So it's really brilliant. It's a bit like the greatest hits where you're like, oh my God, yeah, that was a good story. And it ends so satisfyingly because, I don't want to give too much away if you don't know the series. I just want you to come to it fresh. But there has, over the course of the books, you've seen people be born and fall in love and split up. And, you know, you really come to know and love the characters, especially Ruth and Nelson, the two main ones, I'd say. Yeah, it was great. She writes so well, I think. Really great stories, great characters. So it's always just like, oh, brilliant. What's Ruth up to now, going back to one of her books? So really recommend that. And I'm a bit sorry that it's ended for now. But, you know, I'm hopefully they might come back. Ellie, if you're listening, I'm ready for more.
Yeah, come on, yeah. Dom. Come on, let's sort this out now. I have to say, I agree with you. I was lucky enough to get a proof of that book just before Christmas. And having spent quite a lot of time with Ellie, you know, interviewing her at various literary festivals and stuff over the years, I feel like I've sort of been part of the Ruth journey through you know, talking about her with Ellie at various things. But it is so sad. It's sad to think it might be the last, and yet there's something really lovely about it, the way she's done it.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right, Lucy. Anyone listening who's maybe goes, oh, I think I've heard of Ellie Griffiths, I don't know if I've heard. You should just start at the beginning of the Ruth Galloway series, right? Because it's so worth it. And also, how lucky. You've got 15 books to get through.
Oh, the dream. Yeah.
Do you know what? I have to say, so many people have recommended her books to me. Lucy, you might have been one of them at one stage. But it's the fact that there are so many. I get a bit daunted by things like box sets. I think, what if I read the first one and I love it? I haven't got time to read 15. So it sort of panics me a bit and I get a bit flustered.
Well, what I'd say to that, Jill, is because I completely understand where you're coming from and I agree. But rather than approaching it as a binge, I would maybe start with the first one, see how you get on with it. And then you can just drip feed them in.
No, I can't. I'm scared that I'll love it as much as everyone says I will. So then I won't be able to stop and I'll read the next one and the next one. And my editor will say, where's your book, Jill? Why haven't you written it? It's all
Blame Ellie Griffiths.
Yeah. And what have you managed to read it much recently, Jill? Is there anything that you've read and enjoyed recently you want to shout
out? Well, it's probably a little bit annoying because this book isn't out yet. But
that's okay.
I got the new Lisa Jewell one, None of This is True, which I think comes out in July. And I got it on Friday. I sent it on Friday and I spent all day on Saturday reading the whole thing. That's quite rare for me to be able to do that. But I love Lisa's books. I've read every single one of them. And this one, I just think everyone she writes is better than the previous one.
I completely agree.
And yeah, this one is just astonishing. It's so, so good. Oh. And I heard her speaking in a podcast about it, another podcast, a while back, and she said it normally takes her like a year to write a book and she sort of slows and plods along, and this time this book just absolutely poured out of her and she wrote it so quickly, not in her usual way at all, without sort of planning or anything. She just wrote it. So I'm furiously jealous of that because I'm waiting for that to happen to me because I'm a bit of a tortoise when it comes to writing books. But I really, when it does come out, it's going to be such a massive book.
Great. And I mean, I'm with you. Firstly, on just the love of Lisa Jewell, I think she's absolutely fantastic. And it's very funny you say that because just the other day, I had the pleasure of doing an event with Jojo Moyes, who's another big Lisa Jewell fan and friend. And she said the same thing. She said every book is just gets better with her. And
it's
so
amazing.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll look out for this then coming in the summer, the new Lisa Jewell.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a pre-order link buzzing around soon enough.
I'm sure gonna be on there it. Is.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, thank you both for those brilliant recommendations. And it's time for another now, because it's time for the Book Off, where each of you gets 3 minutes, uninterrupted if you want it, to tell us about a book you love and you think that everyone should read. Now, I'm very conscious of not saying to anyone to pick their favourite book. I think having a favourite book is probably an impossibility. I certainly don't have one and I can never choose one. So this is just a book that you have loved. Maybe you've read it more than once and it's a book that you want to put into everyone's hands. Before we find out what each of you is pitching, we just got to go through a little bit of admin. We always say the person who's travelled the furthest gets to choose if they're going first or second. Now, I have a feeling, I could be wrong, that Jill has travelled technically through this Zoom call the furthest. But where are you, Lucy?
I'm in Bath.
And Jill's in Bristol, right?
Bristol is a bit further west, yeah.
So I think Jill has pipped it on this occasion, which means, Jill, you can choose if you want to go first or if you want to see what Lucy's got and then go second.
I'll go first and get it over with.
Very good. Step up to the plate. I like that. And that means, Lucy, you get the choice of either the bicycle horn or the school bell to be ringing or honking you out at your 3 minute mark. Which of those would you like?
I will go for the bicycle horn, please.
The horn. Okay. That means you get the bell then, Jill. Now, as I said, you don't have to use all of your 3 minutes, but if you're still talking at the 3 minute mark, I'll be cutting you down in your prime with a bit of bell action. So before we start the clock, just tell us, first of all, Jill, which book you're putting forward, please.
I have gone with Riders by Jilly Cooper.
Oh, fabulous. I don't think anyone's pitched a Jilly Cooper before. This is wonderful news.
No, okay. I checked. I did it beforehand.
Oh, you're very good.
Had Riders. Was it Daisy who had Riders? Rivals, I mean.
Rivals, yes. Yes, that's right. But not Riders, correct.
No.
Well done. Well, it's 3 minutes on the clock then, and over to you to tell us all about Riders.
Okay, right. Well, I must start by saying I'm the hugest Jilly Cooper fan. She changed my life, because I don't think if it hadn't been for her, I wouldn't have become a writer. I loved her columns when she first started writing for the Sunday Times, and I loved her little books. But reading Riders, the first, it was a really fat book. Well, it still is a really fat book. And it was just a complete revelation, because it threw me into a world that I didn't really know existed. I wanted to belong to that world. I wanted to become one of these glamorous, lovely, horsey people. Her characterization is just faultless, absolutely faultless. The puns, the comedy, I didn't know that there could be that kind of comedy in a contemporary book back then when I first read this book. And her descriptive passages are amazing. That's something I'm really bad at myself. I don't like writing about sort of countryside and flowers and things. But she does it so beautifully. You want to be there. It made me, it's all about horses. I've never been on a horse in my life, even though I lived in a horsey village. It's had so much drama, so much excitement, so much glamour. The iconic bad boy hero, Rupert Campbell Black. Nobody's ever written a better hero. And he's so naughty and so wicked and so lovely to read about. I have no idea how far into my 3 minutes I am, but the fact that it's such a huge book means you can carry on reading forever. I haven't read it for a very long time, but I know I used to reread it when I used to be a rereader, and it never failed to entertain me. The drama, the excitement of the final episodes at the Olympics, it almost made me want to watch Olympic show jumping, which is an incredible thing. I just think she's a heroine of mine. She always has been. And before I was even published, I was invited along to the British Book Awards, and I was a nobody. I was introduced to her, and I mentioned that I couldn't get home to the next morning because of the snow, and she offered for me to come and stay at her house that night so that I could get back to Bristol the next morning from there. I wasn't able to do it because I couldn't be late for work and I couldn't get from her house, but she offered me that when she was everything and I was a complete nobody. And I just think, what a kind, everybody says how lovely she is. Obviously she is, because I had that experience. So she's lovely and she deserves to win. Yay!
Oh, fantastic. Well done, Jill. Oh, I love that. We'll come back and talk about Gilly and indeed riders in a little bit more detail. But you can have a breather now. Have a sip of tea and, and take a moment, because it's time for Lucy to step up. And before we start your 3 minutes, Lucy, tell us the book that you're putting forward, please.
Mine is One Good Turn by Kate Atkinson.
Oh, fantastic. All righty. I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock then. It's over to you to tell us all about One Good Turn.
Okay, One Good Turn is the second in the Jackson Brodie series by Kate Atkinson. But if you haven't read the first one, Case Histories, don't worry, you don't need to have read it. But it is brilliant, so read that too. One Good Turn is set in Edinburgh one summer. It's the time of the festival and the city is full of tourists, performers and quite a few wrong-uns. Former Detective Jackson is there with his girlfriend Julia, who's acting in this terrible sounding fringe performance. And while she's rehearsing, he's left to his own devices. He witnesses a violent road rage incident that gets out of hand, and then he stumbles on the dead body of a woman out by the coast. Before he knows it, he's unwittingly caught up in all sorts of criminal shenanigans. There's a huge cast of characters, but what I think is so brilliant about Kate Atkinson is that she describes her characters with such humanity and precision, you just feel like you know them within a few sentences. Jackson himself is sarcastic, he's impulsive, he's extremely likable, often finding himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. Then there's the frankly wonderful Louise Monroe, who's a detective sergeant. She's also a frazzled single mum, worried that her 14-year-old boy Archie's going off the rails. Spoiler alert, she doesn't know the half. Louise doesn't take kindly to Jackson getting involved in her investigation. He even ends up as a murder suspect at one point. And the dynamic between them, it's sort of like deep irritation meets fancying each other. It's really satisfying to read. Elsewhere, there's mild-mannered Martin, who also gets dragged into events, much to his alarm. He's this weedy crime writer whose fictional detective has always had a much more exciting life than him. Well, until now, anyway. There's this brilliant recurring joke where I think it's his literary agent has mistakenly put out that Martin used to be a monk. So he's always being asked about his former life in the monastery. And obviously Kate Atkinson, like all authors, has been asked many times, oh, where do you get your ideas from? Because pretty much everyone Martin meets in the book is asking him this question. Finally, there's Gloria, whose husband Graham is in intensive care following a heart attack. Graham had told his secretary he was having a meeting with his accountant, but actually was in a hotel room with Tatiana, a Russian escort, and that's where the heart attack happened. Sitting at his bedside, Gloria gets talking to Tatiana and realises there's an awful lot she didn't know about her husband. So there are loads of different characters and storylines, but they do all fit together like the pieces of a puzzle, or in fact, like a Russian doll, actually. There are lots of Russian dolls throughout this story. Somehow or other, she just brings everything together really brilliantly and cleverly. It's funny, it's so pacey. There are loads of great twists that you don't see coming. And in fact, even the very last line, there is this amazing twist once again.
I was holding on waiting for the last line there. I feel bad for cutting you off, Lucy.
That's okay.
That was your three, and what a wonderful 3 minutes it was. Well done. Two fabulous pictures. I do love it when there's so much to say about the books that they go over the 3 minutes. I think that is testament to the books that are being pitched. Have a little rest yourself, Lucy, after that. Wow. That was, look exhausted. Jill, let's talk about Gilly Cooper then, who is an absolute marvel. First of all, what a great story that you were at the British Book Awards and then she offered you just like a place to stay. I just think, wow, that's amazing.
In her lovely house. It's like, and I'm trying to think if Brad Pitt offered me, I couldn't have been more thrilled.
Oh, it's amazing.
It was just the most amazing thing, but I had to be able to get to work by 9 o'clock in the morning in the hospital. So I had to say no.
Oh, shame.
But how lovely of her to do that.
Really lovely. Yeah. Wow.
And I love that you started the pitch with saying, you know, that Ginny Cooper sort of changed your life, really, that perhaps for her, if it hadn't been for her, you wouldn't have become a writer. And what a wonderful thing to be able to state for another author.
Absolutely. Yes. I didn't know anybody could write like that. And I thought, that feels like how I could write. And of course, we have our completely different styles, but it's the characters, the mix of humour and sadness and everything. I just find it so compelling and amazing and brilliant, just brilliant.
Her puns and the sort of the comedy in the books are just, as you said, I think in the pitch, they're faultless, really, and sometimes so unexpected. And you're right about the sort of iconic bad boy hero. I mean, an absolute pleasure to read, and probably one of the best that there's been in fiction, do you think?
Absolutely, yes. And I think everybody used to read it thinking, oh, maybe I could be the one to tame him.
Yes.
And then, of course, he does meet somebody who tames him. And it's like the miracle that we all wanted to happen with ourselves.
Yes.
But it happens to Taggy in the book. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read it. But I did absolutely love that pitch, Jill, and I absolutely love the book as well. And I loved yours too, Lucy. I don't know One Good Turn. I've read quite a bit of Kate Acton, but I have not read this. I know, shock horror.
You're in for a treat.
Obviously, I have written it down here on the end growing list of books that Joe has to read, because he's got his own podcast where people recommend books. I love the setup of this. I love the idea that it's in, you know, in Edinburgh during the festival, which anyone who's been will know is an absolutely mad time anyway. And when it's Edinburgh is at its most Edinburgh-ish. And I loved how you said that she describes her characters in just a few sentences, and yet you feel after that you sort of know them completely. And what a skill. I do think that's one of her strong points, you know, she has many. And I love the cast of characters you mentioned here, Jackson himself, and then this mild-mannered crime writer called Martin, and Gloria and her husband and everything. And you think, you know, when you're weaving this many characters in a book, they have to come together. There has to be a reason. And I think by the sounds of it, she does that absolutely perfectly. And yeah, it sounds, as you described it, brilliant and clever and pacey and a bit of humour as well. So this is an Atkinson I definitely have to read. Thank you for putting it on the map and giving it to my attention. Oh my goodness. Well, I just thought both of these pitches were ace. And I knew that you both probably had a little bit more to say even before I cut you off. For the sheer fact she's obviously just an absolute legend and lovely person, and we wouldn't have Jill Mansell without her. I'm going to take the Ginny Cooper.
Hooray!
Just picked it there, I think. And I think everyone should read Riders if they haven't, because what a fabulous book. And actually, it does make me think, I think when Daisy was talking about Rivals, I did think, gosh, I don't think I've read many more Ginny Cooper books, but she's got loads, isn't she? And it's like, why am I not going back and, you know, going through the backlist there? A bit like one might do with Ellie Griffiths, in a different sort of genre way. I love both of those. Thank you so much. And thank you very much for being here on the podcast. Promise Me by Jill Mansell is out now. It's published by Headline, and The Best Days of Our Lives by Lucy Diamond is also out now. And that's published by Quercus. And I can highly recommend both of these brilliant books. We need some feel good in our lives, I think. It's been a pleasure speaking to you both. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been brilliant.
It's been fantastic.
I hope we can catch up in real life soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.